This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 261.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. We have not action-packed show, but we have a very packed show for you.
Interview-packed.
Interview-packed show. This is an odd-numbered episode, and traditionally we have a guest on the show. We have four guests this week.
Yes.
Kind of.
Well, consecutively.
Right. Hello, everybody. We are the Family Gamers. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And guess what? I would be remiss if I did not have a fact about the number 261. This fact you may or may not know.
Okay.
Anitra, do you know who Catherine Switzer is?
The name sounds familiar, but I don't know who it is.
What about K.V. Switzer? Would that ring
No, that doesn't help.
Okay. So back 54 years ago, Catherine Switzer registered for the Boston Marathon as K.V. Switzer to hide her gender because at that time, women were not allowed to run in basically any like track events or long distance running events, especially the Boston Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
K.V. Switzer was given the bib 261.
Oh,
and so the world famous picture of the men trying to run her off of the route includes her 261 bib because she's wearing it. It's a picture of her wearing it.
Yeah, it was the race manager tried to catch up with her and grab the bib and rip it off her shirt.
Yeah, there's people like physically trying to push her off the track. So I was reading a write-up on this. It says, for decades, running legend Catherine Switzer received letters and photos from women around the world, all of them praising the number 261. Some women even show their 261 tattoos. The reason, it's the number Switzer wore during the Boston Marathon, in this article, 50 years ago, when she became the first woman to officially run the race. What they were really telling me was, that number makes me feel fearless, Switzer said. Because I, quote, relate to a story about me being told that I'm not welcome or I'm not good enough or I can't do it. To the point where she actually created like a foundation. So you can go to 261fearless.org and it's all about programs and clubs and stuff that women can do to kind of come together and, you know, show that
and
they're
support each other,
fearless, and support each other and stuff like that.
Very cool.
So see, this week I have a nice, wonderful, wholesome fact.
Very wholesome.
About our episode number 261.
All right. I like it.
And of course, the Family Heroes Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial, and Anitra has a nice, wonderful, and wholesome fact from them. So this week is yet another listener question. And the question is this, Anitra, where do you start when wanting to buy a house?
The very first thing you need to do is start saving as much as you can. This should probably not be news by now, but homes are expensive. Cut back on anything you don't need. Kick your savings into overdrive. Then look up your credit reports on annualcreditreport.com, if you haven't already. You want to know if you have any incorrect or incomplete data in your credit history. When you start getting closer to your goal of a down payment, you can visit a few banks to get mortgage quotes to see what they think you can afford. Don't trust their estimate, though. Do your own. Can you actually afford the monthly payment that they set? The way to find out is find the difference between that payment and your current rent. Then save the difference each month.
So that's a good trick, because when we first went for our first mortgage, the banks thought we could afford a whole lot more than we were
comfortable lot more.
And so it's really important to know what you can do, not what they say you can do.
If you have to dip into savings to be able to set aside this extra amount different between your current rent and your supposed future payment, you can't afford that estimate. Remember, though, your monthly payments will actually be more than the principal and interest towards the mortgage. It will also include taxes, insurance, and maintenance. Once you have your full down payment, ideally that's going to be at least 5% of the house purchase price, and you know you can afford the monthly cost, and you qualify for a loan, then you're ready to start looking for a realtor to work with. Ask as many people as you can for referrals. If you want to talk through your specific situation and how to achieve your goals, whether that's home ownership or anything else, Set up a time to talk at firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers today.
All right. Thanks so much, First Move, for sponsoring this episode of the show. So first half of the show, we're going to do what we always do. We're going to talk about what we've been playing. Some of the games that we've been playing, we're also going to be talking about in the second half of the show. So this is probably going to go pretty quick, which is fine because we have lots of great interview content for you.
Yes,
also,
we do.
Also, as a teaser, I have some food on my desk for science.
Oh,
and
next
I think
week?
It's going to hurt. So we're going to do that next week.
All right.
I'm going to try to convince you to...
I'll try it.
All right. Wow. Okay. All right. Awesome. So that's a little teaser for next week. But let's get into it. Let's talk about some games that we've been playing, shall we?
Sure. So I've been getting in a few more plays of Happy City.
Yeah. So we've been playing this a lot on Board Game Arena.
We have.
We got a physical copy from Game Right for review, which is probably going to go up in the next couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah, fairly soon.
And this game is just really just nice and laid back. You know, sometimes you play a game on BGA, and especially if you've never played it in person before, it feels kind of like a nice laid back game. And then when you put it on the table, you're like, oh, there's so much more to this. Like, Seasons was like this.
Well, there are other things, and it's just like, there's so much housekeeping here. Right,
exactly,
oh, my goodness.
Exactly.
Happy City is not like that. Happy City is everything I really want in a casual city builder kind of game. I honestly find it moves a lot faster than something like a Machikoro, even though you do have to wait your turn to be able to do anything.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the nice things about Happy City is that the game pretty much ends when somebody gets to 10 buildings.
Yeah.
And you might skip once or twice, but you're pretty much buying a building every turn.
Mm-hmm.
So the game's pretty much around 12 to 13 turns, tops, every single time.
I would say it's around 8 to 10 turns.
I mean, yeah. whatever it is, right? I don't know. But the point is, like, it's not a well-defined start and finish. It's not like you're timing the game, but it's also not a game like Machikoro, which could just go on and on and on if the die rolls don't really fit what you're doing. Like, there's a better defined end to a game of Happy City.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, there's a lot less luck involved than there is in a game like Machikoro. There's no dice here. It's just card flips, and you have a lot of control. Not perfect control, but you have a lot of control over what kinds of things come out for you to buy.
Yeah, and Happy City is a great game. I mean, there's a lot of games out there that kind of help with arithmetic. Happy City is a great game to help with multiplication because your score in Happy City is your happiness times your population.
Yeah, so this isn't like King Domino where you can really see the multiplication right out there in front of you, but for anybody who already understands the basics of how multiplication works, they can play Happy City. Our 7-year-old Elliot played it just fine. He just needed a little bit of help kind of walking through the scoring. But he knew I wanted a lot of people and a lot of hearts, which represents their happiness. And if I can get a lot of both, I'm in good shape.
Yeah, but we also were able to show very easily, even with a 7-year-old who hasn't learned traditional multiplication, we were able to show him, you know, if you have one happiness and three people, and you can pick between getting another person or another happiness, which one is better for you? And kind of show him that the happiness was clearly better because that would mean, you know, you're doing your counting. So you count 2-3 times instead of 1-3 times.
Right.
You know, or 4-1 time.
So that was the big tool we used was it doesn't work for every number because counting by threes and counting by fours is a lot harder than counting by twos or fives. But we used this sort of count up mechanism to help him understand where his score was going.
Right. And I just think, you know, even though you said, you know, King Domino is a little bit more visual, which I suppose it kind of is, this is pretty visual too. It's hearts and little person icons. I mean, you could put that together, I think. But anyway, the game is fun. The game is like I said, relatively time bound, and it's no more of a hassle to play in person than it is on BGA.
Yeah. I've really been liking it, and it goes up to 5 players right out of the box,
which is
also nice.
Sandy, right? And of course, this being a Game Right title, they figured out a way to make it less expensive than, you know, other games of its ilk from other companies. I still don't know how they do it.
Partly tiny cards for this one.
Well, yeah. But so that is Happy City from Game Right. Keep your eyes peeled to thefamilygamers.com for that review.
All right. I've got another one that you were not involved in that we haven't played in a long time. Asher and I were going into Dunkin' Donuts to just get some donuts and coffee and come back out for takeout. And they're like, oh, well, you're going to have to wait a little bit for the coffee. And so while we're standing there waiting, I'm like, hey, Asher, I've got the MacGuffin in my purse. Let's play that. So we did. And man, I really like that as a 5-minute filler game.
Yep.
It's nice.
It's fun. It's kind of like it has the Flux feel, but it's way faster. It's a little sillier.
It's another one that's kind of time bound.
Yep.
You're never going to have more cards than you start with.
Right.
So you're always discarding or playing cards out.
Well, the other two games that I have on my list, it was a busy week for me, were two games that we are going to talk about in the second half of the show. So I'll mention them quickly. If you want to talk about them a little bit, we can. First one is Rescuing Robin Hood from Castillo Games.
This was a lot of fun. It's a really cute cooperative game. And I liked the nature of we're each kind of individually making our little bands to fight the bad guys, but we're all cooperating to try to rescue all the villagers.
Yeah, the thing about this that's really, really interesting to me is because there is a trickle-down effect with your stats,
mm-hmm.
and I'll explain that in a second, it makes it a lot less like a game that's totally a cooperative game, except I want all the glory, right? Because
yeah.
there's a benefit to not using some of your powers. So in this game, everybody has a common goal of defeating, you know, these guards, the Sheriff of Nottingham's guards, but you each take your turn to do it, right? And so it's not like a lot of co-op games where it's like you take your turn and then bad stuff happens, and you know, it's just the player, you set up the air quote scenario and every player goes.
In our case, all three players went, and then any guards that are left go away, any prisoners that are left are permanently imprisoned.
And so one of the things that you have, which is your brawn, is something that you can kind of hand down from player to player. And so while we were playing, we would say, oh, let's use our stealth and our wit, because you only have two attacks per turn, so that we can hand down our brawn to someone
else. We can pass the brawn on.
So they can put it all together and then use a lot of it, right? So there was this real sense of, it's almost like a Castle Panic-like working together, but even in Castle Panic, it's very transactional. It's like, well, I'm going to help you in this way because you're helping me in this other way.
Yeah, and this was not transactional. This was just a whoever is the last player in order, you know, this particular round, we want to pass as much stuff onto them as we can so that they can have the best attack.
Depending on which scenario you have, like those stats might change, like what you want to pass on, stuff like that. And there's a couple of different things that help that. So it did a really, really good job of really just encouraging collaboration without quarterbacking, which I really
liked. Yeah, I liked it a lot too. The other one that we're going to talk about more later is Power Plants.
Yes.
So we played this on Tabletop Simulator and it was great.
Yeah, so Power Plant is coming to Kickstarter late October, October I think 26th. And we had a chance to learn the game from Adam Dalton, the creator. This game is being published by Kids Table Board Games. I had a chance to talk to Helena about it. And she said that the hobby versions of this game will be available with acrylic tiles.
That'll be cool.
This game is going to feel so good with acrylic tiles, isn't it?
Although, honestly, I mean, and this is my type of gaming, it was a fun game. It's going to be a fun game even with cardboard tiles and cubes, which is more or less what we're playing with on Tabletop Simulator.
Right, or, you know, screen-printed wood chips or something like that. But I just like, I don't know, after playing games like Azul with the acrylic.
Yeah, no, I understand why you would look forward to the acrylic tiles. I'm just saying it's going to be a great game no matter what
upgrade. The gameplay is the gameplay, but I don't know. I'm starting to like lean into the Lux experience.
Yeah, I'm seeing that.
But that is Power Plants. Again, that'll be coming to Kickstarter later in October. Super excited about that one as well.
Don't forget, we played more Fleet the Dice Game.
Oh, this is one event of Fleet the Dice Game that I'd like to forget.
Hey, just because I won for a change.
Okay, I had a pretty okay score, and you just smushed us.
I mean, so we played a 4-player game mm-hmm. with you and your two best friends.
Yep.
And me.
So me and my three best friends.
And we each scored over 100.
Yes.
Which is pretty good.
Yes.
I just scored more.
Over 100.
And it's funny, too, because early in the game, I thought for sure, like, everybody was racing ahead and picking out their specialty that they wanted from the
King Crab. It was the King Crab license thing. You just kind of got the dregs.
And so I was just like...
But you leaned into the dregs.
I was just like, all right, you're going to make me, like, if I take the King Crab license, it's going to be a bonus per fish. Why don't I do everything to lean into get as many fish as possible then?
You know, I've never leaned into that strategy before, just ever. I just... I don't know, haven't.
You guys forced me into it.
I probably should, because, I mean, you get so many victory points for fish. Like, just a lot.
You already get victory points for fish, and then getting something else that's like, by the way, you now get more victory points for fish.
But it's still capped. The King Crab license is capped at 10 bonus points. It's not like...
Yeah, I know. But...
Whatever. Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway.
So,
You know what this makes me want to do is just buy every Pinchback and Riddle game out there.
I mean, there's more coming out.
I know. I know. Three Sisters is going to get fulfilled sometime soon. So,
yep.
I don't know. I'm looking
forward to it. And, you know, we can play more Subastral. That's
true.
Also
we
good.
Sure can. Yep. That game is wonderful as well.
And once again, I also played our answer to Fleet for families who want less complexity, which is Super Mega Lucky Box.
Yeah. I want to play that game more.
Yeah.
I played it the one time.
Yeah, I as someone who likes abstract puzzles, I like Super Mega Lucky Box a lot,
mm-hmm.
even when the luck very much does not go my way. I played a game solo, and I squeaked out a score just above the bottom tier of, like, you lost, you suck at this.
Wow, okay. All right. All right, well, with that, we are going to jump into our convention interviews. We have four, count them, four interviews coming at you from a whole bunch of awesome people.
We'll be right back.
Well, it's time for bed, but this time we're going to use a game.
Wait a minute. You're too old for this review. Ah, that's much better.
This is a snap review for Off to Bed.
Off to Bed is a My Very First game from HABA. It was designed by Kristen Dittman, and it's best for a parent to play with one or two children, ages two and up. So, Elliot, let's talk about the art in this game. Because it's a HABA My Very First game, there are lots of bright colors and simple images. The tiles that are used are big enough to handle very easily. And the wooden figures, you want to show one, Elliot? They're big and chunky and perfect for little hands to hold. Absolutely everything in this game is color-coded. The potty and the sippy cup and the book and the toothbrush. They all have a green background, showing that they're obviously different from the bed-related tiles of bed, blanket, pillow, and stuffed toy. All of these come in yellow, pink, and blue. So, Elliot, let's talk about the mechanics and how you play the game.
There are rules for three games in the box.
Plus, there are tips for parents to ask and talk with their children about during each game or during free play. In Making a Bed, you work together to match items like a blanket and a stuffed toy with their correct animal. Try to put all three animals to bed before the eight non-bed tiles have all been revealed. In Bedtime Matching, each child who's playing is looking only for the items specific to their animal. If anything else is on a tile, you have to turn it back over to its blank side. The game ends when one player has found all four of their items. In the rulebook, it then says, put your pet to bed and tell it a story. You're the winner, so your pet can fall asleep first. Sleepy Bingo follows the same rules as Bedtime Matching, except now any time a tile is turned over that has a blanket or a cuddly toy or a bed or a pillow, the matching item has to be given to the correct pet, even if that pet is not yours.
That one's my favorite.
So let's talk about our expectations and what we figured would happen when we opened up this game. The box says My Very First Games and Off to Bed. It seems pretty reasonable to me that this would be a game about getting ready for bed and suitable for very young children, you know, 18 months, 2 years old, two and a half, somewhere in there.
I expected chunky pieces like this, so the kid couldn't swallow the piece.
That seems fair to me. That's pretty normal for HABA games for very young children, and other games for very young children, too. in my experience, HABA games specific to this age range tend to introduce matching as well as turn-taking and develop fine motor skills a little bit. And now we move on to surprises. Elliot, what surprised you about this game?
Well, nothing surprised me about the game, but it was fun teaching you how to play.
Yeah, that was fun. I liked learning from Elliot how to play, how to match up the various tiles with their appropriate objects, most of which are made out of cardboard. I also tried playing this later on with a little friend who's 2.5. I had a hard time getting him to play the game because he was too excited and amped up when he came over to visit. Matching and bedtime themes are best saved for a really calm time, which I didn't have an opportunity to use. However, I did really like all of the suggestions to parents in the rulebook, starting with free play and identifying the different sleepy time objects, you know, the cuddly toy, the blanket, the pillow, and then moving on to prompting about bedtime routines, things like one last drink of water, brushing teeth, reading a story together. And with older kids, you can even start talking about animal habitats, like bears don't sleep in a bed, do they? They normally sleep in a cave or something like that. Bunnies don't sleep in a bed. They sleep all snuggled up together with the other bunnies in their family.
True.
So, do we recommend off to bed? I think it's good for parents to play with children who need a little reinforcement around their bedtime routines. We wouldn't know anything about that, would we? Bedtime routines. It's best for kids in the age range of like 2 to 4, and they'll probably outgrow it pretty quickly once they start actually knowing how to play it. That said, I still think it's a helpful resource, especially if your kids have a hard time settling into a bedtime routine. Elliot, what do you think we should rate HABA, my very first games, off to bed?
I think we should rate it 3 cozy blankets out of 5.
And that's off to bed in a snap.
So we are here with T from HABA.
Yo, what's up?
In advance of Gen Con.
Hello, hello.
So by the time our listeners hear this, it will actually be
It'll be after Gen Con. but timing.
All right, so...
magic of the internet.
Yeah, the sausage is being made, like, right now, actually, while we do this. We are here with T. We are going to talk about some like Gen Con origin stuff because like we're not going to either one, and you know we thought we would kind of put together these convention interviews for yay convention month season has started or whatever.
So and hey, time to announce new games and get the hype train moving.
Yeah, absolutely. So T, we have been talking about HABA games a lot lately. We actually have released our review for my very first Rhino Hero Jr., which. Super adorable.
Which was super great. Mm-hmm. And off to bed. Mm-hmm. Highly recommended if you've got like a 2-year-old.
Yep.
All right. And so today we're going to talk about another My Very First game and another game in a different series, which was just announced. And this really cool thing for the end of the year, which we were talking about last night.
Yeah.
But so T... Mm-hmm. First of all, how are you? How you been?
I'm all right. I'm good. It's, you know, it's 2021, or as my partner says, 2020B. You know.
Yeah.
We're going. Yeah. But I'm excited. I'm a little bummed. I'm not going to Gen Con or Origins either. HABA is not attending either, which is a bummer. I miss seeing people in real life, but I'm really excited that we were able to get and keep our like release schedule. I know a lot of publishers, it's been really, really hard this year and we had to delay some stuff and move some stuff, but we were really lucky and we managed to get our Gen Con Origins releases, con season releases. So yeah, so I'm excited.
Awesome. I'm going to piggyback on that 2020B. It's like the sequel now with more misery and stress, right? Like... That's what it feels like.
Different flavors of stress.
Right.
Woo!
Yes. Right.
Adding on top the same stress.
All right.
Yeah.
But you know what? So let's rein in the misery and the unhappiness about 2020. But let's talk about happy things. Happy and cute things.
Yes. So, very adorable things.
Very adorable. So continuing on that My Very First series, I guess, thread is the first game in your Gen Con release list, which is
my very first games, Animal Upon Animal Junior.
Because Animal Upon Animal was not cute enough to begin with.
Yes, we had to make it more adorable. Well, so actually, there used to be a My Very First Animal Upon Animal a few years ago, and it was a very big box.
I remember that.
Yeah, and it was good. It was a great game. The problem was is that it was a huge box, and the reason it was a huge box was because we had really, really, really big wooden animals in it, and so the weight was really high, and like so the cost of shipping was really high, and so we had to have this like big box to justify it. And modern gaming won't stand for that. modern gaming looks at a big box with a lot of dead air and goes, So we also, the game did need some modernization and a refresh. The old Animal Pound Animal toddler game was adorable, but it was showing its age. So this is a new version. So this is a new re-implementation of the game. And it's not, it's tough because with the My Very First games, if you're not familiar with the series, there's usually a few ways to play the game, just because toddlers are so, every toddler is different, and every toddler is in a different stage of their cognitive development, and so...
Well, yeah, and the same kid at 2 is going to be interested in different things than they are at 2.5, as they are at 3, and having a game that will actually grow with them through those key years of huge changes is really helpful.
Yeah, and that's what those games are great for. And so this game has a few mini games inside of it, very similar to our other My Very First games. And one of the mini games is the same as the original My Very First Animal Upon Animal, but then the other mini games are different and completely new. So it's kind of like it's a re-implementation, but also it's a completely new game. It's BGG was very confused when I
it does more things.
It does more things. And we talked about this, I think, in our review of, I think it's in the Off to Bed review. Yeah. One of the things I love about this series, as I was going through playing Off to Bed with our youngest, I didn't personally use them because, you know, he's a little bit older, but I really appreciated the almost like the narrative path that the rule books kind of provide to the parents to be like, okay, well, you know, instead of just being like, this game teaches cognitive development in this way, which is helpful, but sometimes as a parent, especially a parent like not trained in that kind of stuff, or this is your first kid, and you're like, I don't know how to talk to a 2-year-old, they're 2, right? And there's almost like this kind of, here's almost like a script that you could, you know, potentially follow and kind of see how to engage your kid in this kind of game. And because we get questions like that or kind of around that idea a lot at the Family Gamers. Yeah. It's like, how do you teach your young kids to play games? Well, we can give you tips on what to do, but a resource like this right in the box with the game, contextually appropriate to the specific pieces, is very, very valuable. And I really, really like that.
Yeah, well, and it's great. And we've the Haba game dev team, development team, has worked for years on like iterating and making that rulebook process great. Like there's that letter in the beginning of the rulebook that like sets it all up and like assures you that your child can just free play. It's all good.
They're not doing it wrong if they're just playing with the pieces and are not interested in playing the rules of the game.
Yes, exactly. Like this will take time. Have patience.
All right, so My Very First Games, Animal Upon Animal Jr. is scheduled for release on September 16th.
Yes.
Which is in the past by the time people
Exactly. No, so that's available MSRP $29.99 for anybody who is interested. Available on the Haba store online?
Yep.
All right.
HabaUSA.com.
All right, so before we talk about the other game that's available, let's stay in this My Very First thread.
Yes.
So tell us about the other big release coming out, which looks so cool. And I am so sad that my kids are really too old for this.
I'm so excited. So for those of you that aren't familiar with Haba as a company, Haba Germany is, it's everywhere in Germany. They like make clothing and storybooks and dishware for your kids. Like they're a part of your child's life.
I didn't quite realize that.
Oh yeah. They make barbecues. Like it's,
it makes me think of going to like IKEA.
Are you going
to
say, is it like, these, like IKEA for kids?
A little less furniture focused, but they do also make furniture. So one of the things that Haba Germany has made for years for the German market is advent calendars, because advent calendars are very, very popular in Germany. And this year we have brought over one of the advent calendars. So we have a My First Advent calendar, which is farm animal themed, and there's a storybook in it. It's not technically a game. It's a advent calendar with 24 wooden meeples, and it's the same style wooden meeple that we put in the My Very First games. So if you have some of those My Very First games, these meeples will be very familiar to you. But they're all new art, and they're all Christmassy art, holiday, winter themed art. And so you can mix them in or just play with them or free play. But the advent calendar, for every day, there's a little like chapter page of a story. So there's a 24 chapter story. It's a short story about the animal that you are finding in the advent calendar for that day. And the story is called Theo Saves Christmas. For those that are diehard Orchard fans, Haba Orchard fans, you'll know that the raven in that game is named Theo. So the story is all about Theo the raven, who is trying to, an orchard, steal all the food. In this one, he's saving Christmas. So
this is the redemption story. Hero. It's the Theo redemption story.
Yes, yes.
I love it. Yeah, you know, there is a picture in the like press release, and it does look super, super cute.
I would say, looking at it, like if your kids are between 18 months and like five and a half, I think they would get a lot out of this.
Yeah.
If you want to bring a new advent calendar into your house.
The doors of the advent calendar are not, they're not perforated. And so it's not like you're punching the product and then ruining it. You can actually open and close them. They're paper, but they still open and close. So you can like refill it if you want. So you could put all the wooden figures back in and reuse it next year, or you could even put in your own things if you wanted.
So more like like a lift the flap book kind of thing where they're designed to go back and forth.
Yeah. Sure. So it is reusable in that standpoint. It is still paper, but it's got a nice gloss finish on it so that it's more durable and it's made to last and live for a bit longer than one season.
To withstand what a two-year-old is going to dish out.
Yeah. I definitely would recommend when not supervising, put the advent calendar up. But that's more just because I think you'll find that a lot of the doors get opened prematurely.
Right. I mean, I love it. I love the idea of reading this to your kids until they can read it to you. And then by then they're probably kind of done with it and you can kind of move on.
Yeah,
that means you get a couple of years out of it. I really, really love that. So that is also dropping on the 16th.
Yep.
Sweet. So that's $35 on the Hobby USA website.
So plan your holiday purchases now.
Yes. Everybody should be buying their stuff like right now for the holidays if they can.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the last thing in this email. This for the Gen Con releases. This is, I have to admit, I am the most excited about more games in the Key series because I love this series so much.
I love it too. I'm really so excited that we finally got this one over here. So the next or the last Gen Con release that we have coming out for this convention season would be The Key, Theft in Cliff Rock Villa. So this is the third to be released in North America. It's the third in the series, and it is a series of high art thefts have been attempted at the Cliff Rock Villa. And luckily, perpetrators were caught, but there's been some confusion as to who was attempting to steal which piece of art and how were they attempting to escape. And so it's our jobs as detectives to try and figure out who did what with what, when, where. Whoever can figure it out most efficiently, a promotion is in their future, aka they win the game. So, yeah.
So we did not actually get a chance to play the second one in the series, which is Murder at Oakdale Club. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So I don't actually know the answer to this. Are you adding additional like kinds of mechanics in here? Is it the same functional mechanics as the first one, which is Lucky Llama Land, which we played?
It's the same mechanisms for like how you look stuff up. The difference between all three games is the types of puzzles that are on the cards. There is some overlap with some of the logic statements on the card. So for example, the roller coaster was sabotaged before the water log ride. Like that kind of logic puzzle is in all of the games. There's a few cards that have that kind of stuff everywhere, but each of the Key game has different types of logic puzzles that it has in addition. So for example, Sabotage at Lucky Llama Land really used a lot more visual processing. So you would have a photo and then you would have to be like, where in the amusement park is this photo taken? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a lot of perspective thinking through that kind of thing. And then with the murder game, those puzzles are more math based and also reading a map. So there's a map of the golf course, and they're on the map. It tells you like how long it takes to get from one part to another. And so one of the clues would be like, this person was seen here at this time. And so you would be like, okay, well, can they have walked from that location to wherever this murder scene was in that amount of time? And so you'd have to do some math and read the map and figure it out. And then there's some math jokes in that one, or math puzzles around summing and multiplication and things like that. And then the theft game, which is the one that comes out at Gen Con, we're going back down to a starter level. So it's a little bit more younger kid friendly, more tired adult friendly as well. and that one, we're going back to more pure logic-based puzzles, more word-based ones as well. Okay. So more of like, this was stolen before this, or this person was wearing blue in their getaway outfit. Like that kind of almost math, logic, LSTAT, word problems on this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's still some like image matching things, but yeah.
I really appreciate that, thinking about this, that the difficulty level is also tied a little bit with the theme, that obviously solving a murder case is a little bit less kid friendly than think about solving a theft or a sabotage or something. Mm-hmm. Therefore, because that theme is less kid friendly, it also has the higher difficulty puzzles in it. So I think that mashes up together really well.
Also, I'm going to point out that I think kids would care a lot more about sabotage at an amusement park than a murder at a golf course, because they wouldn't care about that. All right. Well, T, thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us. They are the brand marketing person for Hobba. I can't remember the title.
Games channel manager.
All things games.
Yep. All the game stuff, sales, imports, translation, marketing. Yep, it's me. Yep,
everything. Awesome. All right. Well, we have like a long-standing at this point relationship, and we are very, very thankful for T and everything they do for us at the Family Gamers. And it's been awesome to talk to you.
Yes, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Awesome. So we will catch you later.
Awesome. Hopefully next year we'll actually like see each other in person.
Maybe unplug? Maybe?
Oh, yeah, maybe. Maybe.
All right.
Yeah, we'll see.
So we're here with Adam Dalton, the creator of Power Plants.
Yeah, and we just played a session of Power Plants on Tabletop Simulator, and the only thing that's important about this, even though Adam is with us, is that I beat Anitra.
You didn't win, but you beat me.
I said I beat Anitra.
The important thing for me is that I had fun, even though I thought I was winning.
That's what I meant.
From me at the last minute.
That's what I meant. We had fun. So, hi, Adam. How are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Power Plants is the latest release from Kids Table Board Gaming. Can you talk a little bit about the game and kind of paint the picture for our listeners of what's going on?
Absolutely. So Power Plants is a game for 1 to 5 players, and you are all playing as wizards competing over this shared garden with a bunch of magical plants out there that are moving around, and you're using your sprites to go out and try to control the valuable patches to earn the gems that these plants sort of, the magic crystallizes into gems, and to get the most gems by the end of the game. And so usually it takes about 20 to 40 minutes. And in the base game, there's 8 different plants, but you only ever play with 5 of those plants in a game. So it's just the variability changes up as the type of game you want to play, whether you want a more aggressive game or a more relaxed game.
So the game board, it's a hexagonal game board, and all the different plants are represented by, well, hexagons. And you start with a couple in the middle, and then you're placing these plants out on the board. But when you place them out, you have a decision to make between planting those plants and growing some other plants. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. So, yeah. So on your turn, you have these 2 tiles in your hand. And you place them out, and you can either use the plant ability, which is usually a more powerful ability, but you only get to use it for the tile you placed out, or you can use the grow abilities of all the tiles that are around that tile that you placed out. And so those abilities are a variety of things. Like they add sprites out into the garden. They will add gems out to the garden that you're then fighting over, because those gems are actually on a specific tile, which is called a patch in the game. Or they will capture other players' sprites, or they'll move the patches around in the garden. So it just depends upon which ability is triggering. But usually, like I said, the grow ability is a little bit less powerful, but it comes to that decision of, well, do I use the more powerful ability, but I only get to use that one? Or do I use the grow ability, which often you can use at least two and sometimes three or four times?
I liked how having that grow ability available meant that, you know, the central board, the patch we're working on, did grow in a much more organic way. I've played lots of other games, especially with hexagonal type tile laying, where somebody just goes like way off out on a limb, and you're really incentivized not to do that here. You're going to stay close into the center because you always want to touch as many tiles as possible. Well, usually you want to touch as many tiles as possible.
Right. And you got to be careful. You don't want to set up, like, if you would try to go that way, you might end up setting up the next player and having an even better spot for them. So a lot of times you're trying to look and say, where can I make a good impact right now? And also, I don't want to set up the next person, because then Andrew's going to do great on his turn.
Yeah, exactly.
So in our game, there was one point where two separate honey leaf patches could have been connected. And I was very nervous that that might happen, because I had controlled one of them, but if they got connected, I might lose control of the other one. So there definitely is an area control aspect to this game, but the Star Flower gives you a little bit of a different ability, which is something that I actually was leveraging through the first
yes,
part
are.
Of this game. Can you talk about the differences between like area control and like what those particular plants do?
Sure. So your gems are going to come essentially in three ways. They're going to come from the board. For example, you talked about the Star Flower. There's another one called the Emberwood, where you actually place the gems out there on a spot and you're fighting over it. But the Star Flower just gives you gems directly during the game. And so you sort of have to have that tug and pull of, well, do I want to get sprites out on the board to try to control these different fields as the game continues to grow? Or do I want to use the Star Flower or this Emberwood as well to try to actually get gems immediately to get those points then before the end of the game? So I know in our game, we just finished playing. Andrew did very well using the Star Flowers. And then in the end was able to, like you talked about, that honey leaf patch, still was able to get that honey leaf patch just to yourself and keep us all out of there to get some points from them as well.
I liked how this game combined all of these different ways to get points. So you can pursue different strategies, although mine was poor. but I like that there's some interest there, not just in, you know, hey, there's a lot of different plants and different ones will come out in a particular game, but also like, oh, hey, I'm going to go all in on this Star Flower idea and just like give me points, you know, gems that I can't lose, even if I get slightly fewer of them, versus fighting over this area control aspect of like, well, if I put more here, then maybe these are protected, but maybe these other ones can get taken away, you know, and all of that jazz.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I really liked about this, it certainly presents as an area control game, right? When you look at the board, you look at kind of, you know, if you walked over and watched a group of people finishing a game of Power Plants, it very much looks like there's some kind of area control mechanism going on. If I looked at this board that we have in front of us, I would say, based on the board, it looks like the green person probably won. And that is, in fact, what happened. But there are a lot of other emergent strategies in the game, which I find really, really interesting. And because there's the board itself is really made up of the tiles, every single game is going to be different.
I also commented while we were playing, but I'll restate it for our listeners. I think the graphic design and the art on the cards associated with all these plants is fantastic. It's really obvious what each different kind of plant does. Like, there's text there and the text is good, but you can pretty much figure it out just from looking at the pictures,
Absolutely.
Which will keep this very accessible for playing with kids.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I'm convinced, and probably, you know, because I've had a chance to work with him over the last year, that Josh Capel is the best graphic designer in the game, or in the industry right now. And he's done a great job on this to make it quickly obvious. Oh, that's what that power does when you look at the five different plants that you're playing in whatever game you're playing with.
So let's step back for a minute. So where did the idea for this come from?
Sure. Well, it's funny. Have you all played or at least seen Anachrony, the big Euro game?
I have seen it. That's a weird connection.
Okay. Yeah. So I got that game and I got the expansion that's really, it's just really like, instead of using cardboard hexes for your exoskeletons, you get miniatures. And so then those cardboard hexes that I had were just extra pieces. So I sort of threw them in my game design components. And one day at lunch at work, I was thinking about them and I just thought, what happens if I play them where the ability of the hex depends upon what it is played next to? And I came up with a rule set at lunchtime. I called my wife and said, I'm coming home at like as soon as I get off work and we are playing this game. So it was from actual just components, really, is where it started. And so we played it and I just thought, I know I'm going to get this game published. It just clicked. And of course, it's changed since then, right? As all games do.
Of course.
Yeah. But like, I knew it clicked. It's like, oh, this is going to work. This is fun. Of basically the power level of this tile changes based upon where I put it out on the board. And well, so that's where it came from, is just some components, some leftover components from another game.
Well, hopefully you don't have to pay licensing dues to Mindclash for using the Anachrony pieces.
I don't think this bears any recognizable resemblance to that anymore.
I'm just kidding. Well, we sat down and including the teach, you know, I think we played a game in about 40 minutes, 35 minutes, something like that with three players.
Yeah, a little bit more than half an hour.
So, I mean, easy to get into. There's a little bit of, you know, getting the hang of the way the grow works, or I'm just very dumb. That's also possible. But, you know, it was fantastic, super fun. So Power Plants, published by Kissable Board Games, is coming to Kickstarter. When is that happening?
October 26th is when it will be on Kickstarter.
All right. So
keep an eye out.
And I'm sure we will talk about this again. I'm sure we'll be talking about this. We had an absolute blast. Adam, thank you so much for spending some time with us and showing us how to play Power Plants.
Yes. Thank you very much for taking the time and appreciate it very much.
All right. And in advance of Gen Con in one short day or two short days, good luck.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Well, have a great one, and we'll catch up again sometime soon.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right.
Hey, everybody. We are back, and we are sitting down with Kiri from Sunrise Studios to talk about this really, really, really beautiful game that I have some cards in my hand from called Mythalix. How you doing, Kiri?
Hey, yeah, really good. Good to see you guys.
So this game showed up at our house last night, so we haven't had a chance to play it yet. But what we have had a chance to do is take a look at some of the pieces, which we've seen pictures of online, so that we knew that they looked amazing. And also, we've been flipping through these cards. I have some of the cards in my hand right now.
The cards are gorgeous.
The art in this game is absolutely fantastic, but I don't want to get into this yet because I would love it if you would talk to us a little bit about what this game is. What is Mythalix?
Okay, so Mythalix is a combination of deck building and area control. I'm of Greek Cypriot descent, as is my business partner. So when we were like, we want to make our first board game, we're like, what should we look at? And Greek mythology came up because it's such a rich vein. And even though there's so much on it, it's quite untapped. And we were like, let's take that setting and take the gods and take them outside of Olympus and put them in a foreign land, a different world, and get them fighting each other, because you could sort of take away the stories and start fresh stories.
And they're always happy to fight each other anyway.
Yeah, that's like what they do. Right. That's pretty much like, you know, I mean, when our boys start fighting, you know, I'm reminded of the fact that like the Greek gods have been fighting for like millennia. So brothers just fight. That's what they do.
So true.
So I think one of the things about Mythalix that like really stands out is these standees. They're clear acrylic standees with art on them. It doesn't seem to me like this is a shockingly new idea, but you never see this. So like, what gave you the idea to do it this way? And why don't we see more of this? Because they look awesome on a table.
So what happened was our artist for the main Greek gods was Genzo Man, and that was some of the first art we had created for the game. And we were like, okay, there are minis, and minis look awesome. We know that. But it's like, you got this stunning art, and then you'd need to get someone to recreate a mini of the stunning art. And obviously they get sent out and they're gray, and they just, and the colors that Genzo Man has used and we've used in the whole game are very bright and vibrant. Mm-hmm. And we thought gray minis might just stand like out, but not in a good way. Unless those people are amazing mini artists and can paint them to look immaculate. Right. I am not one of those people.
Neither are we.
So we thought, we looked at cardboard and we're like, okay, cardboard just, it can come across a bit like thrown in, a bit of a cheaper option. And we're like, okay, so we don't want to go for that, the low budget version, but we didn't want to look at minis. So we're like, okay, what other options are there? And we thought of acrylics, and we're like, okay, let's try it. And somewhere in the UK, I found a company that does printing on acrylics. So I thought, okay, let's see what they look like for prototypes. They came and they look amazing. They look better than we thought they would look.
Because they look amazing.
Yeah. And then, you know, we dealt with our manufacturers, and they were like, yeah, we can do that. And they sent us over samples, and they also looked amazing. We're like, it was just a no-brainer for us. Like, they just, the art just really stands out. And we actually made sure we then built the board slightly around that. So we were like, okay, we're going to have the acrylic gods. We're then going to have the acrylic strongholds, which you place on the board as your area control. And they're also going to be transparent acrylic, so that when you've got the god on the board and when you've got them on the board, you can still see what's on the board below them. So you know what areas you can take back. And we even incorporated, which you might see, the little defense shields. So if you've got a stronghold on, it's a defense plus 5. So it'll be like a 10 will turn to a 15. So we did a whole design around this unique-ish, let's say. But as you say, I've not seen many. And and yeah, that was the idea. We just had, they looked so good. We were like, well, we have to do it.
It's unusual, but I love it. Honestly, I feel like this is a better bet for family gamers like ourselves, because it's got that pop and wow and like, oh, hey, I really want to pick this up and play with it. But man, I am way less worried about my kids with these than I am with either minis or traditional standees.
Yeah. I mean, I'm holding the Ares acrylic in my hand right now. And the nice thing about this, Ares is holding, I guess it's a pike. Is that a pike?
Big pike, big.
So if this was a mini, then that pike would be this thin little thing, which probably would come bent in the box.
Yep.
Right. And I'd have to dip it in hot water and get it straightened out. And then, you know,
about a kid breaking it off.
Listen, I try to be one of those fathers who understands that games are made to be played. But, in the back of my throat, I'd be like, you know, if you break off the tip of this pike, I might have to break off the tip of a finger or something. Not really, of course, but like. But this thing, I mean, it's chunky. Like, you could break the end of that thing off, but you'd have to try
really hard.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen a couple of games that make use of transparency as a functional mechanic, which is what's happening with these shields that you described. I'm like, I think of Imagine from Game Right, which I think is out of print. I think this sounds silly, but like, transparency is kind of its own meta mechanic that can be used in so many places, and it's not. And I suspect that over time, we're going to see more of it. But I think it's fantastic in this case. I actually entirely agree with you about the mini thing. Like, if I had cards with amazing art on it, which, by the way, the cards in this game, the art is incredible. This is Kronos right here.
They do have amazing art.
Yeah. It's incredible. And to see this art transformed into, like, a mini, which I guess if I'm holding it and spending time looking at it is kind of cool, but I want to spend my time with the game playing the game, not holding the mini right up to my face to make sure that I'm able to see the detail that they paid a little bit of extra money for. So having the immediate punch on these tokens is just great.
Now that we've talked a whole bunch about how beautiful it is, because it is, can you give us some sense of how the game plays? Because like we said, unfortunately, we haven't gotten a chance to do that yet. Hopefully soon.
Yeah, of course. So you take control of a Greek god, as everyone wants to do, obviously.
Right.
And then you have it's a hexagonal board, and your god can move initially 2 tiles over. There's land on the map that you can basically win gold or some cards from. And then there's other land, which if you defeat it, you can then place a stronghold on and you get a permanent bonus. So those bonuses can be sort of resource-based, where you would get, at the beginning of your turn, you would get a gold coin, or you would get a power card or a mythical card. Or you then have ones which give a buff to your god. So you have +2 attack, +3 defense, +1 movement. You have 4 strongholds, so you can basically upgrade your god. Along with that, you can buy warrior and army cards, which will help to increase your god's attack with additional bonuses with the warriors. So you could end up throwing with two 20-sided dice, whereas when you start the game, you start with two 6-sided dice plus attack modifiers. And the aim of the game is to collect the elements. So each god starts with an element. They start on an elemental altar in the four corners. And your mission is to basically collect four. So you can either collect those from the elemental altars or, and which happens in pretty much every game I've played, the gods have to attack each other.
Yep.
Sure.
And one thing we've made sure we did with the game is there's many different ways to play it. So you can either go like heavy attack, or sometimes you might just go for like a dice modifier. So you get a warrior and you've got 20-sided dice. So you're then throwing your luck. Because believe me, mm-hmm. you can throw a one with a 20-sided dice.
Yes, I can.
I've played enough D&D to know that.
But you're then in a situation, because if you see on the board the elemental altars and the gods, they all have a defense of 20. You can't mm-hmm. get to that with two 6-sided dice. So it's kind of like phase one of the game is upgrade your god while building up your resources so that you can start attacking the other players and the land. But I've seen people win off having a really heavy defense god. Obviously, attack will always be built up to a stage where with some card bonuses, you'll be able to defeat lands. But for the most part, everyone will sort of upgrade attack. But some people can upgrade the attack to like a plus 30. So you can essentially walk the board and defeat anything you come in contact with, unless it's gods with heavy defense. I've seen movement bonuses of 4 or 5, so you can kind of traverse the board in 2 moves, whereas everyone else, it might take them 5 turns. So you've got this kind of different ways of playing. You can go speed, you can go heavy attack, heavy defense, or kind of like an all-rounded, and just, work your way through that.
That's really cool. I like all of the different pieces that are coming together here. You've got your luck aspect with the dice, and you're doing a little bit of deck building, and you're doing area control, and you're fighting each other. But so far, anyway, it looks like even though there's all these different pieces to it, it's not like a heavy, complicated game. You're just going to dive in and start attacking each other, basically.
Yeah, completely. I think, you sit down, you read the rule book. Some people like to watch a video. Yeah, with this game, everyone has a reference card, which essentially tells you the phases you play on your turn. You play your turn, you move on, you work your way around. Very traditional style board game in that. It's just, you take your turn and move through. And as our first game, we didn't want to create something too heavy. We wanted something people could pick up and play, not something that would take a really long time to set up. You know, I have 2 young kids. So I'm sure you guys know exactly what that's like.
Yeah.
It's hard to set up. You know, it's getting to bed and then you spend an hour setting something up.
Yeah.
You get the game ready. You're like, I'm going to bed now.
Yeah. We have been there. Yes, we very much have. Even though the game, I think it says 14 plus on the box, we did look through the rule book. I don't think that there's going to be a problem with playing this down to 10, most likely. You know, we're going to play through it a little bit and we're going to kind of figure those things out. Obviously, like I said, our 10-year-old is a big gamer. So if he groks it immediately, then that's a good sign for us. And I expect that will be the case just from flipping through the rule book. So I'm really excited to get this to the table because I just think it just looks fantastic. Table presence is awesome. I feel bad for Anitra who takes our pictures because it probably will be a little bit hard to take pictures of the acrylics because they're going to be
shiny. Yeah. We'll see. I have some tricks up my sleeve.
Yeah.
I will mention that I'm really excited for this for another reason, which is you've got so much Greek mythology packed into here with all of the gods, but also all of the different kinds of cards that you can get to upgrade your army or your power or any of that. It all delves into various parts of Greek mythology, and there's a ton there. And again, with our 10-year-old, my focus this year with our sort of social studies history curriculum is ancient history. So we're doing Egypt and Greece and Rome predominantly. Oh, so he's like, all right, Greek mythology, give me all the Greek mythology.
Just make sure he reads all the little biographies at the bottom of every card so he can learn a little bit about every god, every creature, warrior, hero.
That's part of what I'm looking at here is that, not just great art and not just thematically, well tied together, but there's all this information, about Olympus, which is on a card, Dionysus, the Amazonian army or army of the Amazons or whatever you want to call it, Helen of Troy. And all of this is stuff where there's a little bit on the card. And then for me, this is something that can give an additional jumping off point to be like, oh, you didn't know the story of Helen of Troy yet. When this game is over, let's go read that.
Yeah, that's our hope, is that it will pique people's interest because there wasn't you've seen the cards. There's not that much space once you've put what the cards will do.
Yeah.
So, but we wanted to make sure at least every card had a bit of information, because it's Greek mythology, as I say, is such a rich culture. It was one of the only things I liked learning when I was younger. That I don't do history, but as soon as you went ancient in front of it, I'm good.
Yeah. And,
yeah. When it gets too real, that's fine. Leave it to the past. But yeah, it's we really wanted to like get that across, so people could really understand. And you know, we're currently planning our expansion to Mythalix, which is going to introduce the Norse mythology into the game.
Cool. That'll be very fun.
We'll try and time that to release for when you're teaching about Norse. We'll help you out.
Thanks for nothing, Kerry.
All right. Well, we are just super excited to have been able to sit down and talk about Mythalix a little bit. Thank you for coming on the show. Mythalix is available in the U.S. now from Grand Gamers Guild, working with Sunrise Studios to get that out. How much is the game?
Yeah, the game is $55 from Grand Gamers Guild. We've partnered with them because we wanted to make sure the game was available easier in America, because by far America, we had more American backers than anywhere else in the world.
Sure.
And obviously, it's such a big community of board gamers there. Mm-hmm. And shipping from England is a nightmare.
Let's just drop it right there.
Absolute nightmare. So we've done this so we can try and get the game to everyone for a lot cheaper. And the great thing is it's going to be there at Gen Con. You know, it's going to be traveling around to the different convention stuff. I would not be able to do as much. I would love to go to all of them and fly over from England to there to attend. And one day I'll be there. But at the moment, we love having our presence there alongside other great games from Grand Gamers Guild.
All right. And is it available to order now? I know it's fulfilling get backers and stuff like that right now.
Oh, no, it's also available. So you can buy it worldwide from sunrisegamestudio.com. And in America, because obviously we've got this better option, you can buy it from the Grand Gamers Guild website.
All right, awesome. Right. And we'll include a link to that in the show notes for the show, so everybody will have it. So yeah, this is definitely an option for your Greek mythology obsessed...
Gamer in your life.
Gamers in your life. If people are playing Hades right now, this is the board game for them. Yes. You know, we talk a lot about transitioning from video games to board games to do the analog thing and actually look at other human beings in the face. This is a great option for that. And you can get it now, which means you will actually have it for Christmas.
Yes.
If that's, we don't know what's going to be going on. A lot of companies are freaking out about what they're going to do for the holiday season. So we've already started our Christmas shopping.
Yes. Well, so that's an excellent recommendation for the more grown up gamer in your life. If they love Hades right now, they might be getting tired of it by Christmas, but then you can give them this game.
Yep. So that's our recommendation. And I'm looking forward to playing this maybe this weekend if I get lucky, because...
if we make time.
Yeah, we'll have to make time for that. But Kerry, thanks again so much for coming on the Family Gamers Podcast. And we wish you the best, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. Really appreciate it.
All right. Hello, everyone. We are here with a little bit more of our Gen Con Origins, not at the show. We wish we were at the show, but we're not. Coverage. And I have a different helper with me. I had Anitra with me for the other stuff. And now I have...
Asher
is here with me. We are talking to Bryce Brown about his recent game that pretty much just came out, Rescuing Robin Hood. How you doing, Bryce?
Doing great.
All right. And you are also not actually physically at Gen Con, which is kind of sad, but also like not sad, because we're not, I don't know. There's good and bad things about being at a convention.
Yeah, I was just on a playtest with someone from South Africa today of Rescuing Robin Hood, or a demo of what we have come out with as the game. Used to saying playtest, but in reality, it's now
it's out,
all
man.
Demos.
Now it's out.
It's not changing. It's out. So it's pretty exciting to kind of come to that point. And I was connecting with another person in Colorado, and he said, yeah, I've taken off the whole week for Gen Con because I enjoyed it a lot last year doing Gen Con online. And so we have done a number of good events, Gen Con online. Not the same, but still really a lot of fun. So.
Right. Yeah. We did a little bit with Gen Con online last year. Didn't mom do some craft stuff with you with Gen Con online last year?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's certainly opportunities that are available and you can get to more people, which is great. But there's nothing that replaces the thrill of the crowd. So Anyway, so we're here to talk about Rescuing Robin Hood from Castillo Games. This is a game that is, well, first of all, you're rescuing Robin Hood, which is a new idea. You're not rescuing Maid Marian, you're rescuing Robin Hood. So can you talk a little bit about the game, like where you got the idea for this game, and then maybe a little bit how the game plays?
Yeah, I was inspired by the book Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves by Alexandre Dumas. And he, in that scenario, Robin Hood is very bold in going to try and rescue other people or help other people, but sometimes he himself gets captured in these events. And so this is kind of one of those stories of that. When I was coming up with the concept for the game itself, I wanted to make a collaborative deck building game. And I thought through the theme and I was like, oh, maybe I should do pirates because I like pirates. And then, well, pirates aren't very collaborative, so that doesn't work well. But Robin Hood really struck me as a strong theme. And then really it was a game in which we built the theme first and then went to the mechanics to fit the game and kind of tell the story of Robin Hood and rescuing Robin Hood.
So the game came, we got the game in a couple of days ago, and last night we had a chance to play it. Asher, what did you think?
It was really fun. And I think probably my favorite part was all the little like wild card dudes who had like some of everything.
Yeah, giving you the That's flexibility great. To kind of do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
So mechanically, this game reminded me a little bit of Dragonwood. You ever played Dragonwood?
No, I can't say I have.
Okay, so Dragonwood is a game from Game Right, and you're making sets with your cards, kind of like poker sets. So you have like flushes or straights or whatever, but those different kinds of sets are used to perform different kinds of attacks against enemies. So in the same way, the soldiers in Rescuing Robin Hood have different stats, and you look at what you can figure out, and sometimes you scout and things like that, or you just kind of risk it. Dragonwood has some of that same similarity. And the reason why I bring that up is because when we played Rescuing Robin Hood last night, we found that it was a really good experience for somebody who has a tendency to quarterback but doesn't want to. Because it pushes forward this idea that there are options when you play this game and you can make mechanical decisions. There isn't always one answer that's the right one.
Very much so, yeah. And at the end of the day, you've got to make the call. It's kind of like blackjack. Do you want to press your luck a little bit more and risk busting at 20 and getting to 21? Or do you want to just call and be like, no, I'm going to play it safe? And it's hard if you're trying to quarterback. You don't really want to be saying, yeah, go for it all the time, because then you're kind of, you might fail.
Right. And another thing I really liked about this is that there are certain stats in certain situations that will flow from player to player. So like you said, this is a collaborative deck building game where you are attempting to defeat basically the soldiers of the sheriff. And in doing so, you free townsfolk who you can then draft into your decks slash hands for following rounds. In doing so, depending on which of the various kind of scenarios, I'm calling them, come out, some of your traits can carry on from player to player. So even if you look at something and you're like, you say to yourself, I want to be the one who frees these townsfolk, sometimes it's smarter to actually let someone else have the glory instead.
Yeah, definitely. Passing on that brawn to the next player can sometimes be really powerful. And then you might use kind of a wimpy stealth attack, but if it weakens it and sets them up for a really heavy hit next turn, then they will be able to rescue a bunch of villagers, which you then benefit from.
So can you talk a little bit about kind of how the game plays, just to give our listeners kind of an idea of what's going on when you're sitting around the table?
Sure. The basic idea is that for four rounds, you're all building towards rescuing Robin Hood and storming the castle in Nottingham. And so what you do is you will rescue various villagers that have been captured. And so what that looks like is you'll do two attacks each turn. And then that will help you to defeat some of the guards. Wit, brawn, and stealth each work a little differently. Wit, we talked about, has kind of press your luck. Brawn, you just have to go in there with all your force. And then stealth, you get kind of to pick and choose a little bit like the archery or that kind of vibe. And so you each are interacting. You have the ability to use these skills as well to kind of help each other out on your on their turns as well. So you've still got that interaction on their turn. You can have a lot of vested interest in that. So those are kind of the basic things that you work through in the game. And it kind of develops over time, kind of has this building feel. to the game as well. And then it kind of climaxes in this final battle.
Asher, you want to talk a little bit about the whole 5-day process with the game?
Yeah, so every 2 days has one scenario card, except for day 5, which has one for itself.
Mm-hmm.
So days 1 and 2, you are preparing and just getting more villagers. And then you make your deck a little smaller at the end of day 2. And then days 3 and 4, you're still getting more villagers, but you're getting stronger villagers.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of day 4, you put your deck down to 4 cards to go with your hero to storm the castle. And then on day 5, you storm the castle, and you're going through Nottingham Castle, the wall, and then a row, and then 2 more rows.
A whole bunch of guards.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of guards. In order to do what?
In order to rescue Robin.
All right. And if you rescue Robin Hood, what can you do next?
If you rescue Robin Hood, he gives you, I think, 8 of everything.
Something like that, yeah.
Except for Jolliness, which is 6.
Well, whatever.
And
yeah.
And then he gives you another attack, which you can then use to try and defeat the sheriff.
Did we defeat the sheriff of Nottingham?
Almost.
So we did the math so on the close. Sheriff. We had something like 56
brawn
going into the last fight. It was, we had stacked everything up and we had saved up all of our jolliness and everything. And we gave it all to Asher, and it was the last big fight. And we made it through all of the guards and the sheriff, but because of the bonuses from captured townfolk, the sheriff came out in the end and was
no.
Able to it was so close.
10.
Yeah. We had beaten him with 6 left over, but there were 4 townsfolk. So he got a plus 16, and we were not quite able to beat him. But it was very, very close. We were all on the edges of our seats. So that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Asher, you touched on something that I think is really cool about the game, too, is it has kind of this deck refinement aspect of it, of each time you're trimming it down. So you, like, get your deck to be super powerful really quickly. It's not like Dominion, where things get more and more boring as you acquire more points. It's like, okay, now it's like it's really building up a lot of energy.
Yeah, when you pull out those gold townfolk with double-digit stats, you're like, whoa, this guy is jacked.
I remember I got one dude with 10 brawn. And then
10 brawn.
10 brawn and like 1 prayer and nothing else.
Yeah. So Asher awesome. Kind of touched on this in this game. So there's these kind of scenario setup cards. So you'll have a day 1 and 2 card, a day 3 and 4 card, and then a day 5 card. And what these basically do is they tell you which types of townfolk to put out, which are either bronze, silver, or gold townfolk, which denotes how powerful they are. And then on top of those townfolk, you play a certain number of guards. And they're kind of oriented in such a way so that maybe a single bronze townfolk will only have 3 guards defending them, but 2 silvers is going to have like 7 guards defending them. And in the early game, they're only blue guards, because blue guards aren't as strong as red guards, because everybody has played The Legend of Zelda, and we all know this. But your goal is to try to free these townsfolk, because number 1, those townsfolk are who you draft to make your deck better. And number 2, just like we said, if you fight the Sheriff of Nottingham at the end, he gets bonuses for however many townfolk you weren't able to save over the course of the game. So there's a whole lot going on, but it still remains a relatively simple and straightforward game, which we super love. So Asher, if there was one homeschool skill that you think rescuing Robin Hood helps with, what do you think it is?
Probably strategy.
Strategy? You think it's strategy?
Yeah, and like working with other people.
Well, it is important to work with other people, right? Because group work is the bane of our existence, and yet somehow it's still incredibly important. But I think it's arithmetic, because there's a lot of pluses and minuses. And there's a lot of math going on in this game. It's not multiplication, right? But it's you have to add all your stuff up and figure out what that number is. And remember, when we played it last night, I was subtracting from the total and Mom was adding up to make sure it was less than the total. So we were trying to do math in different ways. And so when you play this game, adults and kids, you really have a chance to try different strategies of arithmetic and figure out which one works best for you, which is a great thing when you're talking about homeschooling too.
I think kind of building off of that too, it's got some good elementary statistics of like, how likely is this? Should I go for it? Should I not? Kind of aspect too.
Yeah.
And Asher, I think you touched on the collaboration aspect is spot on. So both of you have touched on really excellent educational parts of it.
I would say, and this goes back to what I was saying about quarterbacking before, I would say of all the cooperative games that I've ever played with family, this is the one that has really led to the most discussion about what we should do next as a group over some other stuff. Because what we're actually also playing, The Adventures of Robin Hood from Cosmos, which Michael Menzel game, which very recently came out. It's super fun. Well, it recently came out in English. Super fun game. But even with The Adventures of Robin Hood, I feel like we talk less about how we're going to collaborate during that game. And I don't know what it is that really, really encourages people to plan with this. I guess it's that even though in The Adventures of Robin Hood or many other cooperative games, you're all fighting for the same goal, there's more of a sense of handing off to the next player in rescuing Robin Hood, which is also true with games like Castle Panic, I suppose, because you're doing some card trading and stuff like that. But I really, really liked that aspect of this game a lot. Like, it really felt like it was group strategy more so than in a lot of other games, even when those other games are cooperative. So I think that was fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, I did a lot of thought into what makes a collaborative game a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And really giving someone else something, a leg up, it makes you feel good. If you think about, like, even social media, if you give someone a like, that feels better for you than it does even for them, which is kind of a funny thing if you think about it. So
in some ways,
the
that's
more
true.
That you can help each other out is kind of what I thought about. It makes people feel better. And I kind of wanted to bring that into the game.
Yeah. And a way that really works is knowing that there's certain stats that will go to the next player and certain stats that won't. And so when you think about it, it almost incentivizes you to want to give those things on because you know the other stuff is just going to get lost. And so since you're all winning as a group or losing as a group, it almost makes you more likely to spend that wit and that stealth because you can't pass those on, except there's some scenarios that allow you to pass, you know, some of that stuff on. Which is great because it really, really promotes that group building and that whoever that last one is, man, I tell you what, they're going to whoop butt. Right? You find that to be the case? Yeah. All right. Well, Bryce, thanks so much for spending a little bit of time with us. Rescuing Robin Hood is available. Where's the best place for people to get the game?
CastilloGames.com is the best place to get the game as well. And then also, if you are listening in and you're a part of Gen Con as well. One thing I will let you know is that we've got a special Gen Con coupon as well. And that is the coupon for it is Gen Con Save 10 for saving 10% off of Rescuing Robin Hood. So again, Gen Con Save 10 and CastilloGames.com.
So how much is the game normally?
The game is MSRP is $40 and it's on sale because we're pre-ordering for $35. And then this is an additional 10% off.
An additional 10% off of that. So $31.50.
Exactly. Right on the money. Already had a successful Kickstarter. And then now the games are manufactured and on the boat and really approaching the port right now. I think they're in port currently. And so they'll be delivered in October.
All right. Awesome. So, I mean, this is a fantastic tabletop family game for a lot of different ages. Plays 1 to 5 players. It says 20 minutes per player, which I think probably is about right. Now, I want to say it probably took us a little bit more than an hour to play the three of us, but we were learning the game at the same time. Just a ton of fun. I mean, this is a great one to put on the table. The art is stylized and just super casual and approachable, which I really like. I do have to say, I love a lot of the townsfolk names. They are puns. So dads out there, congratulations. You're going to enjoy them. I promise. So Rescuing Robin Hood from Castillo Games. You can get it this weekend for $150, $35, something like that. MSRP, $40. Head over to CastilloGames.com. Bryce, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, just thank you so much. It was an honor to get together and connect with you.
All right, awesome. Well, Asher, is there anything else you'd like to say? Anything you'd like to say to the designer of Rescuing Robin Hood?
It was really fun.
What else can you expect? All right, well, thank you so much, Bryce.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. All right, well, Anitra, how about that?
That was a lot of interviews.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. But it was fun.
We had a great time.
It was really entertaining to simulate the Gen Con experience.
It was kind of nice to simulate it over the course of an entire week.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Instead of 2 days.
Yeah. Well, you know, if there are other games that you would like us to take a look at or cover or, talk to some designers and stuff, especially in this time when things are a little bit more available because people are kind of finally starting to get into convention
mode. Convention mood.
There's a lot of different ways that you can reach out to us to ask us to try to talk to those people. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, and on TikTok at Family Gamers AA.
We're always starting conversations in the Family Gamers community on Facebook.
That's the easiest
way to get there is thefamilygamers.com/community.
Mm-hmm. Or you can always just email us. You can email me, Andrew, at thefamilygamers.com.
You can email me, Anitra, at thefamilygamers.com.
If you are planning to go to any conventions this year, don't forget to pick up some Family Gamers merch so you can show everybody that you want to play games with your kids. T-shirts, hoodies, mugs, stuff like that. You can find all of that at thefamilygamers.com/merch. There is still a coupon that is active that'll give you $5 off. Promo code CONSEASON. CONSEASON. $5 off.
Not that I would necessarily recommend taking your kids to cons this year. However, we do also have kid-sized t-shirts.
We do.
In a variety of colors.
We made it a point to get the kid-sized shirts up and make them available. And not only are they in a variety of colors, but some of them are extremely bright colors, like the bright orange one that our son has.
Yes. Our sons have bright orange and bright green, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or whatever your podcast subscription source is. You can also find us on Amazon Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify.
As always, The Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers and learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
All right, thanks so much to First Move for sponsoring the show. And with that, I am interviewed out. We'll see everybody next week.
Until then, play games with your kids.